Oh, hi, I'm Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report. A truly electrifying experience. Right, Stacy?
Well, we do have quite an electrifying experience with this episode because I have a lot of charts, and they're all from Bank of America's Michael Hartnett. So, the headline is coming from Zero Hedge, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Investment Universe, 20 Stunning Market Statistics. 10 years after central banks launched the greatest monetary experiment in history, pushing rates to zero or lower in an attempt to reflate away an unsustainable debt load while purchasing $12 trillion in securities to prop up risk assets, we are back where we started with deflation once again emerging as the biggest threat to the world. Over $10 trillion in sovereign bonds yielding below 0%, and after a disastrous attempt at renormalizing monetary policy, the market is convinced the Fed will cut rates in the coming months. So with this, in this environment, Bank of America's Michael Hartnett has published its latest Hitchhiker's Guide to the Investment Universe.
And we're okay, go pop quiz. You want to stimulate the economy. Do you A, increase wages, or B, you increase the price of fine art being sold at Sotheby's? That's the question. The Federal Reserve Bank and all central banks around the world choose B. They want to stimulate the economy by jacking up the price of fine art and other collectibles and other assets that are held by an extraordinarily small portion of the world's population who haven't worked in generations. They're rentiers. They are the neo-feudal class. They are the kleptocracy. But the Fed and the central banks around the world don't seem to understand either A, how the economy works, or B, that if they keep kowtowing to a very small group of larcenists, they're going to get torched.
Well, part of the issue is that governments themselves have abdicated any responsibility or concern for their populations. And they've basically delegated authority over the economy to the central bank. And the central bank can only implement monetary policy. And monetary policy can only be executed through their member banks. So that's why all the very wealthy continue to get very wealthier. The central bank can't send money to the ordinary person, like the likes of, say, Steve Keen and his policy of quantitative easing for the people. That has to be done through fiscal policy. Remember when George W. Bush sent out checks to every American, like $600, which I never got mine, by the way.
I got mine. I got mine.
Where is my money?
Reagan.
Anyway, Reagan was long before George W. Bush. But so that's why it's only going to the top. In the meantime, the bottom is not, it is basically relative to the top, which is taking off and, you know, rising further and further away from.
I have a comment.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the debt load that is then piling up because the bottom is not able to basically participate in the economy. And we'll come to your comment after at least one chart, okay? Because I promise people charts. $175 trillion, current value of global financial assets, which is 2 times the size of the global GDP. Wall Street is still too big to fail. The total value of global stocks and bonds outstanding has jumped by 8-fold since 1990 from $23 trillion to $175 trillion today. Global asset values are 2 times the size of the global economy. Global asset values fell in 2018 from $180 trillion to $175 trillion. So everything kind of starts in 1990, and you see the debt rise from $23 trillion to $175 trillion. Mm-hmm. What's your comment?
Well, you know, you say that the governments have abdicated their role in managing the economy. They've outsourced it to the Fed, and they only see things in terms of the monetarist lens, so there's not much they can do. However, I would say that they could raise the cost of committing fraud, right? So if you know that the banks are committing fraud, and we know that JP Morgan and all these other major banks have paid hundreds of billions of dollars, Wells Fargo caught defrauding customers on a wholesale level, they can raise the cost of committing fraud by raising interest rates so that you're not incentivizing fraud. It would also would not incentivize the perpetual transfusions of this free money to keep these zombie banks and zombie corporations alive. So the central banks do have in their toolbox the ability to rectify these economic maladies, even within the fact that the governments have abdicated utterly and no longer see themselves in that role. The central banks do have ways to rectify the situation.
Well, nevertheless, they have not taken that option, made it available to them. So I want to also look at these charts. And it's interesting that they continue to use 1990 as the beginning and to today, because 1990 is really the sort of, that's the era that the Generation X entered the work market. That's when we graduated from university and entered the work market. And it's also kind of when you were a few years into your working experience, so the end of the baby boomer generation. So to me, it's kind of interesting that you know, this is all our debt load and the escalation, the exponential increase in debt really started once the baby boomers were all in the work field. They were already working. And they kind of shape the market around them. You could see them. And then Generation X comes in 1990. So that's the end of a generation and the beginning of a new one, and all those behind it. I mean, this is the problem we're having now with a so-called populism, whether it's in Europe or America, is that Generation X, millennials and below, have basically come in at the end of a debt.
Well, I mean, also, as far as the historically speaking, remember 1987, you had the plunge protection team come in to save the stock market. Yeah. In 1990, something similar happened in the bond market. The bond market actually had a bit of a swoon at that time, and the central banks came in to rescue the bond market. So that's when the beginning of the plunge protection team kind of spilled over into the bond market, and we've seen the legacy of that now in 2019, 2020, where there is no bond that the banks won't buy, no matter how much junk it is.
So again, the value of financial assets went from $23 trillion in 1990 to $175 trillion today, an eightfold increase. The global debt outstanding went from $13 trillion in 1990 to $100 trillion. So debt represents 57% of global financial assets. And the value of global equities outstanding has similarly surged from $9 trillion in 1990 to $75 trillion today. World stock equities tripled in value between the global financial crisis lows in March 2009 to their most recent peak of $90 trillion in January of 2018. And yet, like, in this sort of period of time, like, despite all this huge jump, these tripling since just 2009, or the increase in debt of ninefold in the past 30 years, still, we're seeing Larry Kudlow, you know, the chief economic advisor, policy advisor to the president, saying we need 50 basis point cuts in the Fed interest rates. So, like, why the panic if we're booming and everything looks like boom time, and the charts look like boom time, and manufacturing is increasing, and construction, you know, real estate construction is increasing? So why the panic, and why do we need even lower rates?
Yeah, what if Bernie Madoff were allowed to force people to buy into his fund at gunpoint? If Bernie Madoff had an army and said, if you don't buy into my Ponzi scheme, I'm going to shoot my gun at you. Even though the Ponzi scheme was well known to be a Ponzi scheme. Remember, the SEC had investigated Bernie Madoff at least twice before they finally busted him. And it was a well-known Ponzi scheme invested by well-known people. Imagine if Bernie had an army. Now, apply that to the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is a Ponzi scheme. Why do people buy the U.S. dollar? Because if they don't, the U.S. military is sent in and they're obliterated, whether it's Iraq or Libya or some other place like this, Iran. And so that's what Paul Krugman has said at the New York Times, right? He said the U.S. dollar is worthless. It's backed by violence.
All fiat is. So, for example, Europe, not America, has $11 trillion in negative yielding debt. Denmark is one of the longest suffering of negative yielding debt. They have their own currency. So, you know, why...
The world reserve currency is the U.S. dollar. It's still the majority of all transactions in the globe are U.S. dollar. It's the post-World War II standard of economic measurement is the U.S. dollar. And that's why at the moment you have de-dollarization, de-globalization going on pretty rapidly. And you have as the New York Times would say, this constant reminder to people around the world, whether it's CNN that just came out recently and warned Venezuela to stop playing games.
So back to the story about Bank of America and their charts and looking at the global economy. Financial assets are now 200% of global GDP. Back in 1990, they were 97%. So the percentage of GDP, they're twice as big as the GDP of the global economy now, financial assets. Back in 1990, when I first entered the work market, it was 97%. These are, you know, psychologically, this is a different world. This is a different world we are looking at today than when Generation X first entered the work market. These are so when you're seeing millennials entering the work market or Generation Z now, like this is the what they're confronting is a world saturated with financial assets already. Now it's at 200%. In 2017, financial assets were 226%. So 220% is the magical number where everything falls apart and it starts to crash. So we're a little bit below that. We still have a little bit more before we apparently crash again. But you know, this is the dynamics that drive the voter, how they perceive the economy, what they look at when they confront the economy. Boomer generation entered with zero debt in the world. The, you know, probably U.S. debt, financial assets were like 50% of the GDP. By the time I entered, it was 97%, and now it's 200%. So at a certain point, it's saturated, and they can't absorb any more debt beings.
Right. There is a limit.
Yes.
And that limit is historically known to be around this level before you have an event, a reversion to the mean.
And you know what has reverted to the mean is the dot-com bubble. You were a participant in the first
dot-com. Are you saying reverted to the meme or reverted to the mean?
I think you said meme.
Which is interesting given this is 19, no, what year is it? I forget. Continue.
So the past 10 years have witnessed the second great bull market in technology in the past 25 years. In 2018, tech and e-commerce sectors accounted for 26% of total market cap. Now down a little bit, it's 21% today, rivaling prior sector extreme. In the 2000 dot-com bubble, it was 34%. So dot-com share of the financial markets is back to close to where it was in the first dot-com bubble, still quite a ways to go. So whether or not you're looking at this global economy, whether or not, like Larry Kudlow says, cut interest rates by 50 basis points, can we go a little bit further? Can we get to those previous extremes and perhaps pass them? There does look like a bit of extreme left around. We can push a little bit more debt into the, you know, the economic foie gras farm, and we can maybe push tech shares up a little bit higher when Uber and Airbnb.
Well, it's funny how they calculate, though, because I don't think they include fintech or banks, which have now become primarily technology companies and it's not even doing any banking anymore. But anyway, we've got to take a break. We're going to take a short one, and then when we come back, we're going to have so much fun. Don't go away. Stay right there.
In the world of political matchmaking, the European Union has long put values before wealth as its most desirable attribute. In the time it takes for the EU to make a policy decision, China can set up a whole new industry. Are values that attractive to potential partners?
Young elephants have come to us after especially brutal poaching incidents, because sadly the baby elephants often do see their mothers not only be killed but also be cut up and butchered.
I do believe elephants smile. I see it in these little ones. Their whole facial expression changes.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to go to Craig Hemke of TFMetalsReport.com. Craig, welcome back.
Max, it's always a pleasure. Nice to see you and Stacy both.
That's fantastic. Now, Craig, the headlines from the U.S. show manufacturing and construction spending jumped in March. Europe, however, continues to contract. How long can the U.S. race ahead of the rest of the world, Craig?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind, Max, when you say that is you might recall a couple of years ago, Janet Yellen famously said we'd never see another financial crisis in her lifetime. Remember that one? Mm. And then she said, I think it was just back in January, so it wasn't even a couple of months ago, she said, oh, well, you know, Europe might lead us, the whole world, into recession. I think she dropped a few cards on the table there telling you what's coming. Yeah, and in the U.S. is clearly slowing, too. There was some, as we speak, there's an occasional positive data point in the U.S., but everything else, retail sales, durable goods, the employment report, you name it, the first quarter GDP, everything points to a slowdown. And as we spoke, the three of us, back in January, I think this year ends up looking a lot like the calendar year 2010, where we had come out of the great financial crisis in 2009, and the Fed had done this one-off policy, at least that's what we were told, of quantitative easing. It was going to be a one-time deal. It wasn't monetizing the debt. Don't worry about that. No. It's just a one-time deal. And then the economy began to slow in the middle of 2010, and by the end of 2010, we were doing QE2. And now, it's endless. And I think that's where we're headed again here. People are quickly figuring out that there will be no rate hikes this year. In fact, the bond market is telling you the next move is going to be a cut. And all of this stuff is becoming apparent here as we start the second quarter.
You know, Craig, it occurred to me that time has stood still, is standing still. And what I mean by this is that the U.S. and the U.K. in particular are stuck on stupid. We have plain evidence of this with both Brexit and the Russiagate hoax. Brexit, as we've said on this show for several years, it's a logistical and political impossibility. It's like removing H2 hydrogen from water. It's like corralling unicorns. It's stupid. And exactly what's happening now is what we said would happen for years. Utter political paralysis and chaos. The Russiagate hoax, no matter how much exonerating information comes out by the highest courts in America, there is still a doubling down by the deranged, lefty, loony Rachel Maddows of the world. They have this collective mutual derangement syndrome, Trump derangement system, symptom. What am I trying to say? It's not
syndrome.
Syndrome. Thank you, Craig. And in the area of the economics, it doesn't matter what data is published. It doesn't matter what manufacturing data is published. It doesn't matter what the employment data. It doesn't matter. No data. It's all nonsense because no matter what anyone says, the response is always the same. As Larry Kudlow has said, the Fed needs to cut rates by 50 points. That's always the answer, Craig. We're stuck on stupid. The world is dead. It died in 2008. We just need to keep feeding blood to the corpse and everything will be fine. And feed blood to the brain and Rachel Maddow will start being a propagandist, Tokyo Rose idiot. And Brexit will happen, right? Just print more money, Craig, right?
Good night, Max. You summed it all up right there, my friend. That's exactly right.
Larry Kudlow, who I remember from Bear Stearns, he was known as Father Snow on Wall Street, had a horrible reputation. You know, he says, we need more drugs. Well, that makes sense for a guy who's got his reputation, Craig.
Well, yeah. I mentioned earlier, the bond market's telling you this, too. I mean, the way rates have flattened out and come down just since the last 2 weeks after the most recent FOMC, I mean, it's telling you what's coming. But you're right. I mean, Max, I mean, we've been in a zombie economy, that's the best way to put it, since 2008 and 2009. Everything died. The Fed, the ECB, Bank of Japan, I mean, you go around the world, they've all printed trillions and trillions of their own currency to try to reliquify their banks. and manage to keep it all on life support. In the meantime, you got all this other nonsense, you know, to distract everybody and keep the political fighting going. That's a whole other story, I suppose. But in the meantime, as long as the stock market goes up and your quarterly 401k statement is higher than it was the last time, then the masses are mollified and all of this continues. You know, I was just writing for my subscribers again today and reminding them that it has now been about 100 days ago as the stock market in the U.S. and around the world was crashing in December. Suddenly, there's a meeting of the U.S. Working Group on Financial Markets, which, you know, we like to call the Plunge Protection Team. And anybody, I mean, look, go to Google and type in President's Working Group on Financial Markets. This isn't like some crazy conspiracy theory. This is a real thing.
And yeah, back on let me ask you something. Is crack cocaine one of the major food groups? Is heroin one of the major food groups? Can I get healthy by injecting pure smack all day? I don't think so. You know, how can you have capitalism without capital? And how can you have capital without a savings rate that encourages capital formation? In other words, if you don't have capital formation, if you don't have interest rates at least 2 or 3% to encourage capital formation and savings, you don't have capitalism. What is this economy? What do you call it? It's not capitalism. It's not socialism. Is it just a cacistocracy? Is it a kleptocracy? Is it just is it feudalism? What is it? I don't even understand what it is anymore. What do you call this economy? It just looks like crackism.
I always like kleptocracy for the, you know, the root meaning of, you know, klepto, stealing. That's what I've always, ever since you go back to 1913 when the Federal Reserve was created and you look at how much the value of the dollar has been devalued, and when you print more dollars and devalue the dollar, you're essentially stealing from all the people that hold dollars. I mean, you, I, Stacy, everybody listening to us that works, whatever we have left over after we pay our bills is savings. That's the accumulated storage, if you will, of all of our efforts, and it's held in dollars. And so as the Fed devalues the dollar, they're basically stealing from you. And when they steal from you, they give it to the banks, which then use it to create more dollars and charge interest on stuff that was created from nothing. Kleptocracy is the term that I like to use, at least.
Right. Well, according to economics, we're told that supply and demand are a factor in determining prices. And yet in the paper market, in the bond market, in the government bond market, the supply of paper has never been higher, and yet prices go up. Meanwhile, in the gold market, demand has never been higher, or hasn't been higher this high in 50 years. And of course, prices are stagnant. So again, supply and demand don't matter. You have in the gold market now, you've got gold prices are, you know, sideways to down. Is it even worth, you know, what can we say about gold? I mean, it's money. It has no counterparty risk. Central banks like Russia, China are buying hundreds of tons of gold. Central banks are buying them for the first time in 50 years. But Chinese public is buying it. But I guess Americans, if they own gold, that would give them political agency and individual sovereignty. And then they might exercise freedom of speech, and there might be a political awakening in America, right? So by keeping gold cheap, it's like giving the population of America stupid pills, right?
Max, I could send you a link. You've probably seen it. WikiLinks, what do they call it? WikiCables, whatever it was that they dug up and released 2-3 years ago, showing electronic communication right back before the futures market in gold was introduced at December 31st, 1974, how they were going to design this so as to discourage physical gold ownership. The volatility, the price suppression, all that kind of stuff would get people to not want physical gold in the U.S. for the very reasons that you just mentioned. And then, God, you think, who does actually own gold? You mentioned, I mean, you go in the East, from Turkey to India to China to Russia, they're holding physical gold. In the West, anybody that does actually own it owns some kind of alchemized garbage. You know, whether it's a futures contract or a share of the GLD or some unallocated account at a, you know, a Canadian bullion distributor, it doesn't matter. You don't actually own gold, you own gold exposure. And while the banks can create as much of that exposure they want in a kind of a 21st century alchemy, that allows them to manage the price just like they said they were going to do in 1974.
Right. On that note, the European Central Bank just stated last week that member nations need to get approval from them to manage their national gold reserves. So that's obviously another attempt to keep gold, you know, to give the masses stupid pills. Now, the Fed has recently suggested that negative rates are in the cards in the event of another financial crisis. What are they talking about when this house, when the house prices and construction continues to boom and manufacturing is increasing? We have about a minute left. We'll hold you over for another segment, but can you comment on that, Craig?
Well, the other part of that, Max, that they have to put in first is that what we call the war on cash. I mean, just follow the headlines every day, and you'll see little snippets here and there of these stories that equate holding cash, physical currency, $100 bills, you know, with being a drug dealer or a bookie. Only these illicit activities require cash, so therefore, we should just get rid of it. It's a lot easier just to flash a card when you go to Starbucks anyway. If you can eliminate cash, that physical currency, then, how easy it is to impose negative interest rates on people, which is just another form of this wealth confiscation, money confiscation from the banks. That's where we're headed. The central banks have all told you this, that everything is going to be available in the toolbox, as they say, the next time the economies roll over, and negative interest rates is one of them, which, again, gets back to kleptocracy. Let's devise all the different ways we can to steal from the masses and enrich the few, and that's where this is headed.
All right, well, that's it for this edition. We'll keep you out for another segment. Thanks, Craig, for being on the Kaiser Report. All right, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Kaiser Report with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert. I'd like to thank our guest, Craig Hemke, of TF Metals Report. If you want to catch us on Twitter, it's Kaiser Report. Until next time, bye, y'all.